Welcome to the Frisco Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Ellis, and this week we're here with Dr. Mark Barisa, and we're going to be talking to him a little bit about an upcoming talk he has at the SciTech Discovery Center on concussions in sports. This is the conclusion of this year's Chalk Talk series at the SciTech Discovery Center, and if you want to come out and hear his talk, that is going to be happening on July 23rd from 6 p.m. to 7:30, and it is free, again, at the SciTech Discovery Center. Dr. Barisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. So first of all, what kind of a doctor are you?
I am a board-certified clinical neuropsychologist. So in essence, not a lot of people know what that is. It's a psychologist that specializes in the brain and brain-behavior relationships. So we do assessment and treatment of injuries or illness that impact the brain and how that affects thinking, as well as some behavioral abnormalities that can occur.
Okay. And right now you're preparing to give us a talk on concussions and sports. And I thought this would be a particularly interesting topic for our audience because we're a sports crazy town. There are a lot of kids involved in sports here, whether it's football, soccer, basketball, what have you. And I know that the topic of concussions has been of interest and perhaps more notable or well-known more recently. And this is something that people need to pay attention to, right? This is a pretty serious business.
You know, it is. And I think we've come full circle. I think back when I was younger and playing sports, unfortunately a few decades ago, our approach to concussion management was simply, you know, wake them up every hour, make sure that they don't sleep through the night. And that was about it. They took 7 days off. They went back to play. And we didn't think of concussion as being a serious injury, a serious event. In fact, oftentimes the word concussion was prefaced by the word justa, meaning it was just a concussion or a bell ringer, things of that nature. So we didn't think much of it. They were pretty commonplace. The thing is, they're still commonplace, but we've almost come to the reverse of that, where now people think of concussion as being one of the most severe things that can happen to their kids in sports, when in actuality there's a lot of other injuries that are far more devastating in terms of long-term effects and things. That being said, concussions affect the brain, and we know in our youth and in our high school and college professional athletes, the brain is the one thing people don't want to see get hurt and not get hurt permanently. And in the media context, we've seen a lot of attention and focus with lawsuits at the NFL level and other professional sports. So it's brought in a new awareness of these injuries. Anytime we get more awareness, we also get increased diagnosis. We get increased perception of, could this be an injury, could it not be an injury? My approach as director of neuropsychology with Baylor Rehabilitation, as the director of our concussion management program, is to kind of take a rational approach. Are we dealing with an injury that's permanent, or are we dealing with something that's temporary? How do we manage that? And what we know about concussion is that in general, the vast majority of people have full recoveries within anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks up to about 3 months. So we are dealing with an injury that does have a conclusion. It does have an endpoint. People do recover and they're able to get back to sport. The important thing to remember is they have to be managed appropriately to avoid those potential long-term consequences that we see in the media.
Okay, so let's back up for just a moment for those of us who don't really know or understand what a concussion actually is. Can you define that for us so that we have a little better idea of what we're talking about?
Sure. If you look concussion up on the internet, you'll get this definition that talks about pathophysiological changes due to biomechanical forces impacting the head. Very confusing definition. It's very simply put, a concussion is a mild traumatic brain injury. And by definition, there's some criteria that come into play. So a mild traumatic brain injury or concussion is an event that is some kind of either impact to the head or violent shaking of the head that causes a disruption in our mental status, in our thinking ability, in our brain function. Now, there's three criteria for that to be a mild injury. The first criteria is loss of consciousness ranging anywhere from 0 to 30 minutes. 90% of all concussions have no loss of consciousness. So the assumption that you have to lose consciousness for a concussion to occur is simply not true.
Okay.
So the second criteria is 0 to 24 hours of something called post-traumatic amnesia. Now, post-traumatic amnesia is not, I forgot where my keys are. It's not, I can't remember my grocery list. It is a dense memory loss for all events during a time period. So there's a window of time before an injury to after an injury. That window of time in a mild brain injury or concussion is anywhere from 0 minutes, meaning they don't have it at all, up to 24 hours. And that's quite a long period of time for someone to have absolutely no recall. But that does occur. And then the last criteria is normal radiologic findings. So if they get a CT scan or an MRI, there's no structural changes seen in the brain. So what we end up dealing with are those three criteria, the things we look at to differentiate a concussion from something more significant, more severe, that would have long-term impact, that would have long-term damage.
Okay, I think that definitely helps kind of frame up what we're talking about now. Is it, are we making, I don't want to say that we're making too much out of it, because it's clearly, it is something to be taken very seriously, but have we swung too far to the other end where we're, are people making more out of concussions than they necessarily need to? In other words, are they self-diagnosing and getting scared, and is it becoming a more traumatic event than it has to be necessarily?
I think anytime we have increased awareness, we do kind of tilt the pendulum sometimes too far. Now, that being said, I'm going to be the last person to say these are not significant injuries.
Of course.
These are definitely significant injuries, but part of the key is how are they managed? What we know about concussion is we're dealing with a chemical, a metabolic injury as much as a physical injury. So the simple way to put that is if you imagine some chocolate milk that someone poured orange juice and hot sauce in it, and you didn't know it. When you drank that, you would experience this kind of awful physical reaction. You would have an emotional response that someone messed up your chocolate milk. You might even be confused what happened. That chemical change in the brain is very similar to that. We get an influx of some chemicals into the powerhouse of the cell, the mitochondria, the energy of the cell, that kind of creates that same kind of bad chocolate milk in the head.
Okay.
And that lasts anywhere from a few seconds, few minutes, up to a few hours, up to 7 to 10 days, maybe a little longer in kids. The interesting thing about that is it does resolve. But how we manage a concussion, that's where sometimes we can get a little too far.
Okay.
We know we want people to have rest, but one of the things we have to be careful of is not to pull them into what we call cocoon therapy, where we put them in a dark room for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, or 3 months in some cases, where we're waiting for these individuals to have no symptoms. I think you and I can both agree, we wake up some mornings and we have some kind of symptom.
I'm pretty foggy most mornings, at least until I've had my coffee. So.
Exactly. Yeah. So what we have to be careful of is we're looking for a benign symptom presentation. If someone goes into a concussion with headaches, they're going to have headaches afterward. If they go into a concussion with a proneness toward anxiety or worry or school difficulties, those don't go away because they got hit in the head. So we have to be careful not to over-attribute normal difficulties to an event that occurred. And that's where we can have some very prolonged recoveries. So we have to be careful that it's not that we're over-diagnosing. We have to make sure we're managing these properly. We're doing the proper assessment, and we're gradually working them back to keep them safe.
So I want to talk about some of the ways that a concussion might be managed in a minute. Before we get there, and I know you treat this at levels from children all the way into professional athletes, but for the benefit of the Frisco families who are mostly going to be either recreational athletes themselves or perhaps more significantly children, their kids who are participating in sports, what are the things that parents or spouses need to be looking for in someone if they suspect they may have had a concussion or if they've just taken a good blow to the head? Maybe they aren't immediately showing any particular signs, but is there anything that we should be keeping an eye on that might tell us something's up?
Sure. Yeah, one of the major things we see in the acute or the immediate stages after a concussion is balance disturbance, dizziness, light sensitivity, headache, noise sensitivity, and then that kind of mental fogginess you described. Those are some of the big things that we look for in the acute setting. We have a luxury here in Frisco. We've got some of the best athletic trainers I've ever worked with in the country.
Good to know.
That they've all been trained in concussion assessment. They've been trained in appropriate management and getting our young students back on the field after such an injury in a safe way. And they take a conservative but a rational approach. And I've been impressed with them more than I could ever say. And it's that partnership of having the medical providers partnering with those athletic trainers to provide input, communication back and forth. We look for those kind of symptoms. As a parent, you want to watch for the headache. You want to watch for the dizziness. Do they just not seem right? And oftentimes it's just as simple as that. I ask a child in my office, you know, can you tell me what's going on? And they're like, I just don't feel right. Well, specifically, what is it? I don't know. And that's one of the vague things about concussion that makes it such a problem in terms of appropriate diagnosis and appropriate management, is we are dealing with a symptom-based approach rather than actual signs or actual objective evidence of here's a problem.
Is there any way for you to physically diagnose a concussion and be certain that's what it is without a CAT scan, for example, or something like that?
Well, actually, the CT scan is used to rule out a more significant injury.
Okay.
So the reason a CT scan is brought into an evaluation when someone comes to the ER for a concussion is they want to make sure there's no bleeding on the brain.
Gotcha.
That would require acute medical intervention. We go back to those three criteria. We want that normal CT image. So it's one of the few injuries or illnesses where you go to the doctor with all of your complaints and they do the test and go, it's normal, so you have X.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of an odd thing. So really from a sign and symptom presentation, we do look at balance. We look at any visual abnormalities or eye movement abnormalities. There are some objective things within that, balance, cognitive assessment, some of those things. So there are objective measures that we can be pretty clear, pretty definitive that that's what occurred. But there's not a concussionometer that we can plug them in and that will read positive or negative.
Okay.
That's the tricky part.
So, and I'm going to say something that might sound like a joke, and I don't necessarily mean it that way, but your description of the symptoms to me sounds the way I have felt after a night of hard drinking on a few occasions.
Actually, I would point out that that's probably pretty accurate, because if you think about the effects of alcohol, what is it? It's a central nervous system depressant.
Mm-hmm.
So your thinking is slower, your mental processing is slower, it affects your balance and your equilibrium. So there'll be maybe some dizziness, but with drinking, it's primarily vertigo. It's right. That external turning. All of those are what we commonly see after an acute concussion. And so I don't think your example is a bad one at all. It's just not one I get to use in the clinic setting because parents don't want me always talking about
it. Yeah, I'm sure we're not going to talk about your 10-year-old going on a bender, but I'm just wondering, is the effect of a concussion on the brain in any way chemically or neurologically similar to what happens when you drink too much? Are those chemicals that you were talking about causing that sort of depressive effect, or are they similar symptoms but really unrelated types of
actions? Similar symptoms but different pathology,
okay,
is how I would look at it. But one of the pieces of that is the brain has an ability to balance itself. So when we talked about that chocolate milk syndrome, that chocolate milk phenomenon within the cellular structure of the brain, well, what we're dealing with there is something that the brain has gone into protection mode. And it's saying, don't do that. So similar to someone who sprains an ankle and you run on the ankle, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have a concussion and you feel okay, but then you decide, I'm going to go back and play, it's like drinking the bad chocolate milk again. You experience it. You're not making it necessarily worse unless you're taking another hit. But you're experiencing the badness that is that chemical injury. And over time, that gradually gets better. So when you go and try it, it's not quite as bad, but it's still bad.
Yeah.
And that's what we see, this gradual improvement. And that's why appropriate management of concussion is so critical, that we don't want to see these kids, I feel better, so I'm going to go back and play. That actually puts them at risk for more significant injury. And that's what I think has been the appropriate side of this swing toward increased awareness. You know, we want to avoid these catastrophic kind of events that we see on television and in the news. Where someone gets something like a second impact syndrome where there's bleeding and hemorrhaging within the brain, you know, that's not a concussion. That's a far more significant injury. The difficulties we've faced now is we started to equate these mild injuries with these more severe injuries. We're starting to say, you know, we've got a concussion, that means there's going to be long-term emotional problems or long-term behavioral problems, long-term cognitive issues, when that's actually not the case. The research regarding concussions would indicate that we actually get very positive recovery trajectories and people do get better and are able to get back to sport. The difficulty comes when we start adding concussions on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've talked about what a concussion is. We've got some idea of what the symptoms are and how to identify that possibility. We know who to talk to. Our trainers would be a good first place to start, especially here in Frisco. It sounds like we've got some great people. So now let's talk about the management side of this. Mm-hmm. You or your child has been diagnosed with a concussion. What happens next? We know we're not going to lock them in a dark room for 3 weeks, but pulling back from there, where do we begin and how do we treat the concussion?
You know, I think just that, we need to pull back. And without going into great detail, we need to understand that each concussion is an island in and of itself. There are some generalities. There are some common things that we expect to see, some averages. But I try to approach everyone who comes to my office as an individual. And what they bring to the concussion is very similar to going to an airport. You don't know what the cost of your flight is until you see how many pieces of luggage you brought with you. Well, if you've got pre-existing migraine headaches, a family history of migraine headaches, some history for anxiety, some history of learning disabilities, well, that's going to add to the cost of this concussion. And it's going to lengthen the amount of time and the types of interventions that would be needed. And so what we look at from the front end is we want to do rest for a few days. That's pretty standard. I think throughout the literature there's support that we need at least a brief period of rest. Once we get through that brief period of rest, though, we need to gradually start adding activities. And it doesn't mean we go out and we run a 5K. It may mean we go for a walk around the block. And we just gradually start getting those normal daily activities into place. And as people remain or continue to get better and then remain with a benign symptom or not a pathologic or a significant symptom pattern, then we can gradually increase activities to some of their athletic exercise, those types of routines. And then under the direction of the athletic trainers, if they're in school sports, there's actually a standard gradual return to play protocol that can take anywhere from 5 to 10 days, depending on the extent of the injury and the types of things we're seeing, where literally they gradually start adding physical activity until they get into non-contact practice, then into contact practice before they're finally released to full competition. So there's a process to this. All of that being said, we do have some that have lingering vestibular balance issues. We'll have some that have some lingering visual ocular motor problems in some of the more significant cases. So that sometimes requires additional physical therapy to kind of help regain the balance system back in place. The body adapts, so we have to repeat things to kind of get the brain to start going, okay, this is how I balance, and to get that back. And the same with the visual motor kind of aspects. There's some different kind of therapies that can be done on a visual end. On the cognitive side, sometimes there's some short-term medications that can be used that kind of help with attention, help with the sleep-wake cycle, because sometimes that gets disturbed. If you sleep all day, then you're not sleeping again. So we try to get that back in order. So there's a variety of different things that are available, but it's really based on the symptoms that are presenting and how long they've been presenting. So sometimes we need that short little 1 to 2 week window just to see how they're going to do and then kind of manage from that point.
Okay. Well, it sounds like, first of all, the good news is the research and our understanding of concussions has come a long way since you and I were maybe school-aged athletes. And it is largely something that people should expect to recover from.
Depending on the approach and the management that's been taken and the individual aspects. Like I said, there are risk factors for longer recovery periods. All of that being said, it's never a good idea to bang your head against a wall. It's never a good idea to get multiple injuries to the brain. So we don't want to minimize the importance of watching out for these injuries, preventing these injuries with proper headgear, proper fitting headgear, with proper exercise techniques, proper tackling techniques, proper sport technique in general, so that we're heading balls in the right way in soccer. We're making tackles with the head up and using our arms instead of our heads to tackle in football. In lacrosse, making sure we're wearing appropriate helmets and other gear. In girls soccer, we get a large number of injuries because of the musculature of the neck's not very strong, so it doesn't withstand the whiplash effect. So strengthening of the neck and those kind of things. There's some things we can do to prevent that. one of the things we're even looking at now is Baylor's partnered with a group called Fusionetics that looks for injury susceptibility. And one of those things we're even going to look at with them is the neck strength. Are there exercises we can do to improve the neck strength to limit that risk to some extent as well?
Okay, that's good advice. So let's go out on this one. I want to leave you plenty to talk about when people come hear you at the SciTech Discovery Center. But in terms of things that people can do to help prevent injury, do you have any recommendations to leave us with?
The main thing is proper technique and proper protective gear. People get confused sometimes when you look at what are the number one and number two causes of injury, of traumatic brain injury in children. The assumption is contact sports. The number one cause of traumatic brain injury in our youth is actually bicycling.
That actually would make a lot of sense. I know when I was a kid, we did not wear helmets riding bikes, and I don't see kids anymore without helmets riding bikes, at least
exactly.
Not in our neighborhood.
So. Exactly, but we put an emphasis on the sports.
Yeah.
One of the other highest causes of traumatic brain injury in youth is playgrounds. And hopefully we're not going to move toward outlawing bicycles and playgrounds in the near future.
I hope not.
But I will say that there have been multiple legal cases about playgrounds. And if you look at the playgrounds we have now compared to when you and I were younger, they're very different. They're much safer.
Yeah, they've got the rubber kind of like recycled tire stuff laid down. It's not just bars on concrete.
Yeah, I kind of like swinging and jumping off a swing into gravel. I miss that. But that's one of the things we have to think is our kids are out there to play. They're out there to get exercise. They're out there to breathe the fresh air. As parents, we get so frustrated that our children spend so much time on video games and on their phones or other devices. Yet, we're seeing a dramatic reduction in youth participating in sports due to fears of concussion. Quite honestly, sometimes the effects of a ankle sprain, ankle rupture, ACL, those types of things are far more long-term in their effects than concussion, but we don't hear about that as much.
Mm-hmm.
So with a lot of the lawsuits, with a lot of the movies that are come out, there's this new emphasis toward concussion, and so we should hold our kids from contact sports for concussion. You know, sports have you have to look at a risk and benefit approach. And I think it's important that our children get the opportunity to participate in that group concept, that we're a team, we're working together, and we're getting exercise and doing things that are actually good for our bodies as well as putting some risk in there for harm.
Yeah, there's definitely a balance to strike in there, and I don't think what we want to encourage is people to hold their kids back from sports because a sedentary lifestyle is not a healthy one either.
Absolutely.
A whole host of different reasons for that or different ways, but it's not time to quit sports. It's just time to be aware and keep our eye on what's happening. All right, well, Dr. Barisa, thank you very much for coming out today. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
And again, everybody can come out on July 23rd. Hear you at the SciTech Discovery Center. That is at 6 p.m. It is free to get in. So if you want to learn a little bit more about this topic, I would encourage you guys to go out and hear Dr. Barisa talk.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you guys next week on the Frisco Podcast.